Right now, as we do each and every week here in the 9 o'clock segment, we are going to go inside the ropes.
For a quick look at a number of hot topics in the world of golf this week, let's go inside the ropes.
It is the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you by our good friends at PGA National Resort and Spa. Topic number one, Patrick. Well, unless you've been living under a rock for the last 4 or 5 days, you no doubt have heard by now, Tiger Woods, the number one player in the world, making his much-anticipated return to the PGA Tour next week, actually just 3 days from now, this Wednesday, first round of the match play rounds in Tucson, Arizona at the WGC Accenture. And, Pat, we had Jaime Diaz on in the first hour. He opined that he thinks Tiger's going to come back better than ever. What do you expect from Tiger? Can he win next week in match play? And what do you expect from Tiger long-term this year on that surgically repaired knee?
Number one, yes, he can win. And anytime Tiger tees it up, he can win. You know, given the fact that he won the U.S. Open on a very difficult Torrey Pines after basically taking a month off, 6 weeks off last year on a broken leg and still able to figure out a way to win. Yes, he can win. My expectations probably are not as high as yours. I know you expect just come out of the gates, you know, on fire, ready to go. I think it will take Tiger a little bit of time to adjust his swing to the knee. Again, he can basically win on one leg, so he'll probably figure out a way to do it. But I, knowing the purist that Tiger is, I think he will try to figure out, you know, what's the best swing for this knee and to be able to compete long term, not just, you know, this year. So I don't view this as a blockbuster year. The one thing Tiger does is usually prove me wrong, but at the same time, I think he's in contention in a lot of things, but I don't think you see the 10 out of 13, you know, stats that he was carrying last year and the year before that in terms of wins. I think he wins at least a couple times this year, but at the same time, I think you see him tweaking a little bit with that swing and getting himself really, I think, ready for years to come rather than this year.
A lot of naysayers speculating that the reason Tiger coming back at the match play is because one of his biggest biggest sponsors is Accenture, so he's kind of placating to Accenture. I don't think that's the case at all. Tiger match play has been better to Tiger than medal play has been. He's won 3 of the last 6 WGC match play events. He's won 6 U.S. amateurs in a row, 3 U.S. junior amateurs, and then 3 U.S. amateurs in a row from like 92 to 97. So Tiger, or 96 that is, Tiger Woods excels in match play. I really think he could win. It will not surprise me at all if he wins match play next week in Tucson. However, having said that, let me say this. Let me speculate a little bit. Tiger's been rehabbing for, what, 6 months? He had knee surgery 8 months ago in June, right after the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. He's been rehabbing all along. He's been working on his swing. John Cook said he's been working out in the gym like a fiend, and he's going to come back bigger and stronger than ever. He's driving par fours at the 16th at Isleworth. He's all gung-ho and geeked up, ready to go. If he loses the first round this Wednesday in Tucson at match play, I'm going to speculate he enters the Honda Classic because he's not going to want to get all revved up and then play one round of golf and get knocked out of match play and then have to wait another 2 weeks until he can play at Doral.
I absolutely agree with you, Russ, and I actually thought the Honda would have been a better entree for him than going out west and dealing with, you know, mountain conditions and different types of greens and terrain and all that than what he's been practicing in, which is, I'm assuming, is conditions like we have here in South Florida. So I thought the Honda actually might be a better starting spot. But you, as you mentioned, there's sponsorship, obligations and those types of things, and I understand that, plus the match play factor, which I'm sure Tiger enjoys. So I think that all factored into it. But like as you said, if he somehow loses in the first round or maybe even the second round and doesn't feel like he got a lot of that, you know, or began the fine-tuning process, then the Honda's a natural for him, I think, to step right into. That was a good timing.
Okay.
Number two goes to you, Russ. Dateline Perth, Australia, Russ. Anthony Kim had to find a last-minute replacement for his regular caddy at the Johnny Walker Classic this week down under in Australia, thanks to Aussie immigration authorities. Kim played in last week's Malaysian Open with his regular caddy, Eric Larson, and they both arrived in Perth at 4 p.m. on Monday. It's believed Larson was refused entry for an alleged failure to declare a criminal conviction in the United States. My question to you, is the Australian immigration authority being too tough on on Larson.
Absolutely they are being too tough. This is ridiculous. I mean, Erik Larson has been on the straight and narrow for well over a year now. He was Anthony Kim's caddy for most of the entirety of last season, 2008, on the PGA Tour. For God's sakes, he even caddied at the Ryder Cup. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than the Ryder Cup, and if the Ryder Cup is going to let him into the field, caddy for Anthony Kim last year at Valhalla, how the hell is the Johnny Walker down in Australia not going to let him in? I think they're being way too tough. This is ridiculous to me.
I don't understand it. If you know anything about Eric's story, I mean, he was caddy for Mark Calcavecchi, I believe, and ran into some trouble and, you know, did his time for drug selling, I believe, and you know, did his time. You know, for Australia sort of not to know about that, I find that kind of strange. But nonetheless, the only thing I will say is if there were some procedures that Eric was supposed to follow and he just absolutely didn't do them or knew he should have.
Shame on him,
then,
yes.
Then right. So maybe you don't know the whole story. But if it's just one of those situations where Australia just decided to, you know, keep him out because of...
But they couldn't have just gone to him and said, hey, you didn't fill out the proper paperwork. Can you do us a favor? Sit down for 15 minutes.
Right.
Here's a pen. Here's the paperwork. Fill it out and everything will be okay.
Exactly. I mean, this isn't like some, you know, guy who's trying to sneak into the country or whatever. Eric's, you know, his story is pretty well known out there. And for Australia just to kind of... It seems kind of strange.
He's trying to sneak into the country by being on the bag of one of the most the most famous golfers in the entire world. Yeah, he's trying to sneak in.
Doesn't make a lot of sense, Russ.
Russ Evans and Pat Rooney Jr. with you. This is Golf Exchange presented by the Honda Classic. We are entrenched in our PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Rope segment. We do it each and every week. Handful of hot topics on the world of golf. And it's brought to you by our good friends at PGA National Resort and Spa. Topic number three, Patrick. This week we're at historic Riviera Country Club on the PGA Tour. A couple weeks ago, we were at Pebble Beach for the AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am, and there's a chance that the women might be playing Pebble in just a couple of years. A report in this week's Golf World magazine, women hopeful for a chance to play Pebble. How much fun would it be to compete on the famed Monterey Peninsula Links? The best chance for that happening is in a future U.S. Women's Open for the LPGA Tour. Women would get a chance at Pebble sometime after the men play there next year in the 2010 U.S. Open. There is no U.S. Women's Open course set for 2014. And it could well be that the USGA will wait until after the men play Pebble next year to make that decision regarding the 2014 U.S. Women's Open. Pat, your thought on the ladies playing Pebble?
Absolutely love it, Russ. I think this just helps women's golf. You need to go to venues that people are sort of familiar with and have an allure and have a magnetism to them. And obviously, Pebble is one of those places. You go play this thing somewhere in the middle of Ohio or wherever, and it just doesn't have the cachet that it does for the women to play it on a big course like Pebble Beach. So I think it just helps with the notoriety of it. I think it helps with the PR with it. I just think it helps women's golf playing at these big venues. They played, I remember Patty Sheehan won at Oakmont, and I think it was 94. And it just seemed like, you know, that was a great tournament, but the venue really helped bring some good publicity to women's golf. Last year, they played at Hazeltine, I believe, another, you know, U.S. Open course. So
a couple years ago, they played the British Open at St. Andrews.
Exactly. I just think that
Reyna Ochoa broke through.
Anything like that helps women's golf. It you're playing at venues that already have established identities. So when you go there with your biggest tournament, which is the Women's Open, and you play your big event there, I just think it adds to the hype of it, and I think it's a smart thing to do. All right, Russ, no response from you. Good.
One last note on that, Pat. I know how you love me sneaking in one last take on it after Colin.
You're like the Australian immigration. You're not playing by the rules. You're like Eric
You mentioned Oakmont Country Club, and you as a dyed-in-the-wool Pittsburgher, you're going to be happy to know next year's U.S. Women's Open returning to Oakmont Country Club, the 2010.
I think that's great. And speaking of Oakmont Country Club, that goes into question number four. You mentioned Tiger driving the par four at Isleworth. We have the one this week at Riviera, number 10, which is a great drivable par four. Oakmont has like three of them, 2, 14, 17. What other drivable par fours are on your list of top holes of all time?
Well, the drivable par four list, I think, starts with Riviera number 10. That, as far as I'm concerned, it's the greatest drivable par four in the golfing world, and there's no doubt it's the greatest drivable par four on the PGA Tour. Riviera number 10, just over 300 yards. The best thing about Riviera number 10, and obviously the other the other drivable par fours on the list, as far as the PGA Tour goes, is TPC Boston, number 4 at the Deutsche Bank, TPC River Highlands, number 15 at the Travelers Championship, and those are both good, as well as TPC Scottsdale. We saw it just a couple weeks ago at the FBR Open, number 17 at TPC Scottsdale, perhaps for me, maybe number 2 on the list, but Riviera number 10 is number 1. I think the most brilliant thing about Riviera number 10 is there's no water, and yet the scoring average at number 10 for this week is well over 4. I mean, it's like 4.5. In fact, number 1, the par 5 first hole at Riviera is scoring at a better average. I mean, Phil Mickelson this week at number 1, his average is 4.0. He's had two eagles there. He eagled it yesterday. He eagled it on Friday. He birdied it on Thursday. When you got a scoring average that's greater on a par 4 than it is on a par 5, to me, that is architectural genius. There is no water on number 10. It's just phenomenal bunkering and a green that runs away from you, and you're driving at it at the short side. I mean, it's a green that, you know, from the line of the tee, from the line of the tee on the drive, it's only about, 25 to 30 feet deep at that point. So if you're driving at it, you've got to hit a perfect drive to hold the green. And then if you don't, you're likely going to have to come out of a bunker or pitch over a bunker to get to the green. I mean, it's a phenomenal hole. For me, it's the greatest drivable par 4 in the world.
All right, I guess I'm going to get a response to this. My only thing, Russ, I'm not disagreeing with you. When they do par four, when they do drivable par fours, like you're saying, I hate it when they put water in front because that negates the whole purpose. Nobody is going to be able to carry, you know, most drivable par fours are in the 300-yard range. Most people, you know, pros, including some pros, most pros, are not going to be able to carry the ball 290 to get it over water that's right in the front. So if you're going to do a drivable par four, make it that, you know, you can have risk reward with traps or things like that. But when you put water in front of it, it just kills the whole idea of it. So I like you're saying, number 10 at Riviera, the fact that they don't have water in front of it, that makes it much more of a reasonable drivable par four. When you put water in front of it, that negates the whole purpose of it.
Right. There's the
sound. There it is.
Nice job, Colin Sino Holder. By the way, just my top three, just for prosperity's purpose. Drivable par fours, number 1, Riviera, number 10. Number 2, TPC Scottsdale, number 17 at the FBR. And then number 3, for me, St. Andrews, number 18.
Ooh, I like that.
How about
that's
that?
A good one. I'll go with that one. I'll put that at number 1.
Hallowed home of golf. All right, there it is. Another award-winning edition of the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa.